It's time to think big with Big Alaska guests, Big Alaska adventures, and no good lying through your tooth, tall Alaska tales. It's the Big Alaska Show. Broadcasting from the studios of a remote cabin outside Bolchitna and streamed worldwide at KFQD.com with podcasts streamed at BigAlaskaShow.com. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve and some Big Alaska Show friends. Our book review panel visits Homer author Richard Chapone. And historian, educator, humorist, and author of Bonfire Saloon and other mighty fire selections, Steve Levi joins us. Designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure, unless you're a guy named Mike Ford. Good morning, everyone. It's the Big Alaska Show.
And good morning. Thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve, along with my good buddy, co-host, Mike Ford. Mike Ford, you know, you and I have been talking about doing some kind of trivia quiz and some kind of game show quiz and all this stuff, but you're the one that's been teaching me to make things easier.
Okay.
Already, I can tell Mike's got one foot out the door, you know. So today we have a book review show, mm-hmm. and so I was going through some books and things like that, and I came across a really old book, and I thought of you, and I thought, how much do we really know about Anchorage, Alaska?
Wow. Already, it's open-ended.
Already I can hear the cautiousness in your voice.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'll give you some clues, and then if you can think of the answer, just blurt it out, okay?
All right, go for it.
Okay. This is the first tallest building in Anchorage.
The first tallest building.
It was called a skyscraper.
It was called a skyscraper. Okay, let's see. And
it was christened in 1917.
Oh, okay, so it's got to be downtown.
Yes.
All right.
And it was four stories.
Four stories. Okay.
And later originally it was a four-story hospital.
Oh, okay.
And it was on 2nd Avenue.
So the native hospital, the original
No. Good idea, but no.
On 2nd Avenue. No clue.
What's something old that would be established?
Oh, the railroad then.
Yes.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
I never thought that was four stories tall.
Well,
stories weren't as tall back then or what?
Four stories. And they probably didn't know about earthquakes and heights.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. The train depot.
Well, it said later the 2nd Avenue building was used as Alaska Railroad dormitory. But when you look at the picture, it's right down right where it is.
Well, when I go down there for the Ferrandi snow sculptures, I'll definitely have to go by that building and check it out again.
Yes. See, there you go. Anyway, this is now that I've done this with you, you can challenge me.
Okay.
With some kind of trivia from stuff
you come up with. What is the difference between muck-tuck and muck-luck?
An L, a T?
Well, you wouldn't want to put your foot in your muck-luck and find that it's full of muck-tuck.
What I'm saying is the next time we do a show.
Oh, okay.
But that was good.
Darn, I used that one already. Well, you'll forget by then, so.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You did that in about 2.5 minutes, so I've got to beat that.
Okay. Our time. There's our record. All right.
Yes. So far, we have our baseline to work from. That came out of some old book I've got that, you know, it's completely wrinkled and impossible to read. But today's show, we have a book review show, and we've got Richard Chapone. He's an author out of Homer, Alaska, and our book review panel with Lolo Page, Stan Jones, and Chris Lundgren are in that. And a little later on, we have Stephen Levi, the author, humorist, historian, with one of his books as well. So it's going to be a fun show, buddy.
Absolutely. And you know the best part about today? We have 6 hours and 46 minutes and 18 seconds of daylight, Uncle Steve.
I can tell the difference.
Yes.
All right. Hey, listen, Mikey, great to be here with you. And that's
it. And away we go.
Thanks for everybody joining us on the Big Alaska Show. But of course, Mike, we'd be remiss if we didn't start the Big Alaska Show out the right way.
That's right. We never let Harley near this coffee.
Beagle gas. Folks, the key to doing an early morning radio show, especially an early Saturday morning radio show, is a strong cup of coffee. And there's no stronger cup of Joe than Big Alaska Show Blend, the intense early morning coffee for intense early morning indigestion. That's why it's preferred coffee for Alaskan authors. Writing is no easy task, and waking up early to put words together that actually make sense sometimes requires a little motivational attitude adjustment. Enter Big Alaska Show Blend to the rescue. Just one sip of this caffeine-packed pile of dirt jumpstarts wordsmiths with an energetic boost to generate flowing phrases that may not make any more sense, but will certainly blister the ears of the censors. Bitter biting with a specific gravity of basalt. Big Alaska Show Blend. The intense early morning coffee for intense early morning gas.
Pour me a cup. It's time to get up and face the world, my friend. Pour me a cup. I can't get enough of that Big Alaska Show Blend.
And that's how we roll here at the Big Alaska Show. But stick around, we have more Big Alaska Show coming up. And you can hear our show streamed and get podcasts at BigAlaskaShow.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show.
I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
Mike Ford and Uncle Steve here. You know, we have a nifty book review section in the Big Alaska Show that you can find at BigAlaskaShow.com that features primarily Alaskan authors, their books, and a podcast interview with them. We also have a fun group of authors we gather as our Big Alaska Show book review panel that include Lolo Page, Chris Lundgren, and Stan Jones, who have books you can find in our review section as well. Today, author Rich Chapone from Homer, Alaska joins us to talk about his book, The Hunger of Crows. Our guest is Richard Chapone. This is someone, Lola, you brought to our attention. You were really excited about.
Yes, The Hunger of Crows.
I don't think of crows. I always think of raven. But anyway, here we are with our Big Alaska Book Club, our panel with Lolo Page, Chris Lundgren, and Stan Jones. I'm excited about this guest because when I emailed Richard, I said, you know, normally we're more prepared. We actually prepare some questions prior to get it to you. And he says, I've never been prepared for anything in my life. And so I knew he'd fit in perfectly here at the Big Alaska Show, the longest running mistake-ridden radio show in Alaska's history. Proves you can start at the bottom and go down. Lolo, what drew you to Richard's book?
Well, first of all, I met Richard at a Kachemak Bay Writers Conference 1 year. I think it was the year that Andre DeBios III was our keynote, I think. Do you remember that, Richard?
Oh, yeah. Andre, he was a riot. He's one of my favorite guests we've ever had. Very funny, great guy.
Yes, I remember that. And that's where I initially met you. And then when your book came out, I was standing in the Eagle River Library, and I was looking up at those screens they have where they show the new books. And I saw your book up there, and I remembered your last name, and I went, oh my gosh. And when I found out it was in Homer, I had to read it because that's where I spend a lot of my time in the summer. So that's initially what drew me to the book. And then when I read it, I couldn't put it down. It was so good.
Why don't we give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Richard Chaponne. Before we get into your book, Richard, I've got to ask you, has anyone ever spelled your last name correctly?
No, never. It's never happened. I've been meaning to get rid of some of the clutter. There's a lot of extra letters in there, but they give me too much joy.
Well,
I can't let go of them.
But I was thinking, you know how you go to these spelling bees, and at the national level, you know, these kids are about 3 years old. And, you know, they're born in the basement of a nuclear reactor, and they know words I've never even heard of before, and they can spell it. But I'm thinking that the Big Alaska Show should sponsor one word, and that's your last name. Tell us a little bit about who you are. You obviously live in Homer. How long have you lived in Homer?
My wife and I bought land on Anchor Point near the Anchor River in early 80s, 84, something like that, mid 80s. And we lived in Anchorage from 1982 to 2002 when we moved down to Homer full time. So we spent 20 years in Anchorage and 20 years down here. My wife is a school counselor. She just retired from Homer High School. Before that, she was a counselor at Bartlett High School in Anchorage for many years. And she put in almost 20 years here in Homer. And so we've been here full time since 2002.
I'm really glad you joined us. And Lola, why don't you take over and let's find out more about Richard and his book.
Sure, Richard. I was wondering if you could tell us how you made your journey from construction to novelist, if you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. And so I flunked out of my first year of college when I was 18 years old, and I went into construction work. I was a house painter largely. I got married young and had children right away and lived in upstate New York near Buffalo for many years working in construction. And then I got divorced and moved out west to Las Vegas, Nevada after 10 or 12 years, 1980. And I met my current wife, Lynn, and we moved up to Alaska in 82. Continuing to work in construction, I started a wallpapering business in Anchorage because that's what I learned in Las Vegas. I did a lot of work in the hotels and casinos, hanging wall coverings, commercial stuff. And that's what I did in Anchorage for 20 years. I hung wallpaper and, the Lusac Library, all the fabric walls in Lusac Library, the 16-screen theater, all the acoustical wall panels. I say wallpaper, but it was heavy industrial stuff. And all the hotels, when the Marriott chain came in the mid-90s, we got really busy. I think I had four hotels going one winter. And I just did a lot of the big commercial vinyl stuff. But in 1986, in the midst of all this, I sent a story into the Anchor's Daily News writing contest, a statewide contest. I had never written anything. I had no interest in writing before that. As I said, I had dropped out of school. I'd been out of school for 20 years, and I was almost 40 years old. And the story won an honorable mention in the open to the public fiction, I think. And my wife encouraged me to go back to school. She said, you know, you could be a writer. You're full of crap. And I thought, well, that's good credentials for a writer. And so I went on campus at UAA, and I met Ron Spatz, who's the head of the writing program there, Professor Spatz, who took me under his wing and said, well, you know, you're pretty good, but you don't know what you're doing, which is totally Ron, and which he was right. And so you need to take a writing workshop. So he stuck me in the 600 level, graduate level writing workshop. I never taken a class on writing. I knew nothing about writing. And I went in there with a story the first night, and I was so proud of it. And they eviscerated it. They nuked it, you know, as they should have. It was a mess. I didn't know what I was doing at all. So, I started taking classes in 87 and I stayed there. I had to get a bachelor's degree. Finally, I was, 43 years old or something, and got a bachelor's degree and stayed for the MFA there three more years in the master's program, and eventually learned to write. I started publishing stories in the early 90s in magazines and short stories. And that was my love. And it still is. All these books behind me, these are virtually all short stories. This shelf right here, these are the best American short story awards starting in 1984 up to today, 2021. I'm a short story junkie. I love short stories.
And you also wrote for Gray's Fishing Journal, right?
Yeah, many times. I still write for them occasionally. They pay very well. And that's, I've had stories in mostly in literary magazines, but in a couple of big ones. The Sun magazine published one of my stories. That's a national magazine. Playboy had a story in Playboy, a fiction story. For you intellectuals out there, you know. After 30 years of that, I thought, well, I really need to write a novel someday. It just felt like you aren't really a writer until you do what Stan does, which is like write novels, you know. And, you're just kind of an academic dilettante writing short stories. And besides which, nobody reads them. I mean, you know, I have three books of stories that sold, you know, 12 and a half copies each or something like that, you know. And so, you know, stories don't sell. Agents hate stories. Publishers hate story collections. I thought I'd write a novel. And also, it was a good opportunity to learn about plot, which a short story writer doesn't need to know much about. And I knew nothing about plot. So I started writing. I had taken started out as a short story and made it into a novel. And it was the worst, you know, trial and error and error and error and error for years. The story was in my second collection in 2010. And the novel came out last November. So 10 years of stumbling around trying to figure out how to write a 350-page plotted story.
Well, thank goodness for persistence, right?
Yeah, sort of like the stock market, if you can just live long enough.
Now, I feel like I lived too long. This month has been tough in the stock market.
Yeah.
It hasn't been good, right?
Well, Richard, you know, The Hunger of Crows is a fast-paced action thriller. And it's set in Alaska, and I noticed it mostly has 5-star reviews. So as an Alaskan author, what mattered most to you in the telling of that story? What inspired you to write it?
Well, as I say, partly it was an exercise to learn about plotting, but for me, I just fell in love with the characters, and it's always been, short story writing is always about characters. There isn't much time for action. And so I liked my characters, and I wondered why they did the things they did, which led me to go back into their lives and make up backstories for them. And I just live for characters. I like reading short stories and or novels that are character driven, particularly. And as an Alaskan, I wrote a lot of stories, but didn't write stories set in Alaska for about 10 years until I'd been here for 8 or 9 years. I didn't feel like I could do it. But now after 40 years here. Yeah. Not that it qualifies me in any way as an expert. I don't mean that, but I'm probably not going to make the obvious mistakes that you see in books written by people who may have visited Alaska.
Chachacos. Richard, can you give us a little overview of what Hunger of Crows is about?
Yeah, it's a story about a woman on the run. She's from Phoenix, Arizona. She gets in trouble. She's almost 40 years old and freaking out about turning 40, basically. And she is trying to stay young by picking up men in bars and having one-night stands, reckless sexual encounters. And one of them goes awry, a one-night stand with a guy who turns out to be a very dangerous character. And she has to flee Phoenix, Arizona, and drives and drives and drives till she runs out of the road at the end of the road, Homer, Alaska. And so she's trying to hide here in disguise, you know, quietly off the books, working as a waitress for cash. So there won't be any payroll records. And this guy, unfortunately, is part of a large military contracting business, security, like Blackwater, that sort of thing. And he's got spectacular access to search mechanisms and agencies. And he shows up. If he didn't show up, that wouldn't be much of a story. Right. You got to keep things going. You know, if that white whale had washed up on the beach in front of Ahab's cottage, Moby Dick would have been a very short story.
Yeah, right. it would have ended after Call Me Ishmael.
It would have gone out for chowder, but after that, that's about it, right?
You know, growing up in Alaska, we would always, I don't know if this happened to you, Stan, but tourism was so big up here, and we would always look for license plates where people came from and their accents. And anybody that says winter, they're from New York. You can tell New York, it's winter. Everybody else goes winter, not New Yorkers. And how did you come up with Hunger for Crows? How did crows figure into this?
Well, in the story, there's a moment there's two sets of characters. There's two out-of-town characters and there's two local Alaskans. And so that's a good setup as a narrative strategy because it allows the Alaskans to explain Alaskan stuff to the out-of-town people. It's like in Harry Potter, they can explain all this hocus-pocus gibberish because it's a school. So the teachers have to explain it to the students, which is a lot better than the narrator explaining it to a reader directly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, anyhow,
at some point, there, in the original versions, when it first went out to the publisher, the local guy was a carpenter living here in Anchor Point, had a Stellar Jay on the porch that would come and scrounge from him. You know how those guys, Stellar Jays, are knock on a window like that and demand food. So the out-of-town guy, the secret agent, he's a commando type guy, said, wow, that bird's really smart. And the local guy explains to him that this is a corvid. It's that family of corvus, which are ravens, which Steve mentioned, crows, jays, and magpies, basically. And he says, the local guy says, they're really smart. They're, and this is factual, their brain mass proportion to their body mass is the same as that of whales and great apes. They're the smartest birds you can imagine. And so he tells them a story. The local guy says, you know, and which is based on what goes on here in Alaska, where the songbird will hit the window, you know, if a song, and the blue jay, the stellar jay will hear that thunk and it come flying in and eat the thing, knock its brains out before it can recover and fly away. The lifelong mercenary soldier says, man, that those guys, that sounds like the people I work for, you know? So it was the ruthlessness of the corvids that started the idea of the title, which was The Hunger of Corvids, which was fine until 2019 when COVID came out. The publisher said, hey, man, we do not want that word on the cover. It's too close.
Yeah.
Besides, they'd say, you know, who's going to read a guy who can't spell correctly, you know?
It looked like a typo. So corvids had to go. And so I changed the bird from a jay to a crow because we have a lot of crows here in Homer. Steve, you were saying you think of ravens in Alaska. Well, that's true. When I lived in Anchorage, I never saw crows. Yeah. But down here, they're like everywhere. They're like pigeons. They're just all over the place.
There's murders of crows all over the place.
Going back to what you're talking about, going from short stories and developing plot and character and stuff like that. And Chris, when I think of your book, Accidental Tourist, but it's more sort of like a reporter, I guess. I mean, it's entertaining. It's just when I'm, and then when I'm thinking of Stan, you know, you talk about going to the big leagues in a way, Richard, where you're going from short stories to full novels. Yeah. Is this a process that makes, I mean, is this similar process you would go through like Stan? I mean, you're writing full novels, or do you just jump right in and start writing novels?
Well, I was a reporter for public radio and newspapers. Never wrote much short fiction, except for one squalid story that appeared in a men's magazine called Cavalier.
Ooh.
It was called The Losers. And a couple of people on their way out of Vegas ran out of gas. So they decide the way to get gas is for the woman in the family to trade sex for gas. And she does. And she gives the gas station attendant the clap and off they go. That was my first venture into fiction.
And I think I saw the Disney version of that.
It was on the Hallmark Channel, actually.
It was Hallmark. It was a Hallmark movie. That's right. Mary Tyler Moore played the lead, right?
Yeah. So then several decades of earnest journalism passed, and I came to live in Kotzebue for a while and thought, well, my God, what an interesting place, and decided to write stories set there. And the best way to investigate a place, I think, is to write detective stories. So that's what I did.
And Chris, I was going to ask you, does that interest you going into writing fiction, or do you like, anyway, you know what I'm trying to say?
I do. I probably won't go into writing fiction, but I found it interesting that Richard, you said it all starts with a character for you, and with my short stories, which are all nonfiction, it starts with a situation, and then I write about the character as he or she experiences that. So it's an entirely different process, but it's fascinating to me to imagine kind of starting with a character and creating a story from there.
Chris, when I read your book, it read like a novel. It read, each of those stories read like a like a mini novel to me.
Or at least a collection of short stories. What I liked about Chris's book is just sort of the way ordinary people in fairly ordinary circumstances can just make one mistake and get themselves in such trouble. It's really fascinating.
It's Richard, her book is, it's sort of like, it takes Alaska and takes Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. Just, you know, they get hit by the truck, then the rock falls on it after, you know, I mean, just it's one after another. And I mean, we laugh like hell. Well, enough about Richard. Let's talk.
I was going to ask you, you know, I was reading your, since we do boating on Kachemak Bay, and I just, you really captured that. I mean, you really, the way you describe that, have you spent a lot of time out on the bay? You obviously have, haven't you?
Well, I like to fish. I grew up fishing and I came to Alaska to fish, sport fishing, not commercial fishing. So I do spend time out there when I can. I have a friend with a big boat and we go out trolling for kings and fishing for halibut and so forth. But I'm really no sailor. I mean, some people have said they like the nautical stuff in the book. There's talk about the boats and navigation and stuff. I had to call my friend Captain Ed and on the phone and say, so what happens when this goes here? And what do you call that thing up in the front part of the boat? And then, the front part. And then it'll go, the bow, you dip. And so I'll say, do we think we should need to wash the floor? The deck, he says, the deck. He's a naval guy. And so, yes, the stuff about the boats, fishing I could write about with accuracy, but nautical matters, no, I know nothing. I can't tie a knot. Oh, my God. When he sees what I do with line, I say rope. He says line, not rope. It's line. And so the accuracy in the novel came from help from Ed. I had to get expert advice on that. I had talked to a former special ops guy who was a brother of a good friend who told me as much as he could about stuff that he wasn't supposed to be talking about, so that my commando character had some authenticity, because I'm not a military guy and I haven't fired a gun probably since the last time I hunted ducks sometime in the early 70s. Yeah. So, I know nothing about guns or military life. I just had to research a few things. The cocktail waitresses, I would have liked to research more, but my wife kind of put a damper on that, you know.
I was going to actually suggest that the Playboy article, had you used pictures instead of words, it probably would have sold more, you know.
This graphic novel.
You know, Stan was talking about Cavalier. The story he just described is pretty upscale and literate for Cavalier, because that was pretty highbrow for those guys.
Well, Stan does have an image he has to retain.
Yeah.
Richard, how long do you take to write your book?
Well, it was a short story in 2010, and I started writing it, making it into a novel, because I didn't feel like it was complete, and I felt like it needed to go further, and I got interested in making a novel out of it. So probably, I finally turned it into an agent in 2018, and it's January, so that's close to 8 years, and then the agent edited it and worked on it with me, revised it and suggested changes for 2 more years. And then they finally sold it in 2020. And the publishers then edited it and had me revise it again for another 6 months or so. So I don't know, 10 years, I guess. Stan could write one of those in an afternoon.
I wish.
I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, none, zero.
One of the things you talked about, Lolo, his characters and the authenticity of the characters. Are these characters you see, Richard, hanging around Homer? I mean, how do you piecemeal? Is it like Mr. Potato Head and you take things and put them together?
Yeah, most of it is composite, particularly the main character is female. I've never been a woman in spite of rumors to the opposite. And so I had to had to draw from experiences, and I've been married since I was 11 or something. So I don't know.
Well, you are from New York, man. I mean, yeah. You know.
So I haven't really known millions of women, but you do know women over time just by working around, particularly in the college, not so much on construction. And Carla, the main character, is a composite of her wildness comes from a couple of women I knew in Vegas when I was single briefly. in the disco era in the 70s, which was a fun, wild time. Sounds like Stan's book. I didn't have to sell my body, but it came close a couple times. And so she's partly that. Her terrible relationship with her mother comes from another person, a woman I know really very well and known for many years. The social work background comes from my wife. My wife was a social worker before she became a school counselor. So yeah, you just borrow and take things as you need them to make a complete character. And some stuff you entirely make up, you know.
There's an interaction between the plot and the characters. The plot needs to go somewhere, and you realize that doesn't quite fit with the character who's living the plot. Then you can tweak the character, put some backstory in or a passion or something, and make them all mesh together. I did a book thing this weekend, and one of the people who was there after we talked for a while, writers like to talk even more than they like to write, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's an excuse to not write. I have to talk now. I can't write. So I yammered on and talked about writing and then just told some stories really unrelated to writing. And he said, you know, you see the world in terms of stories or as a collection of stories. And I don't see it that way. He says, I think that's really interesting. And I think he's right, but it's never occurred to me that you could see the world in any other way except as stories, because it's full of people and they all have their stories.
Certainly everybody in Alaska has a story, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's why I liked your character, Carla. You know, she had a unique reason for coming up here. Everybody has a different reason for coming to Alaska. So that's why I liked your book. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about, when I talked to you before, you talked about Flannery O'Connor and some of the other folks that influenced you for short story. Who influenced you? What novelists influenced you and that you gravitate to?
Well, my favorite novels, and again, I mostly read short stories, but I really like Dickens. Not that I would ever try to write like Dickens, but I love his stories. They're complex. Oh, Stan likes Dickens. Okay, great. Yeah. I just finished Nicholas Nickleby, and I'm just starting David Copperfield. Now, remember, I dropped out of college young, so I didn't get an education for a long, long time. So I'm way behind on reading, and I never studied literature. At UAA, I've spent 8 years there learning writing. I mean, I was a writing student, and that's a distinction that people don't always make, because I'm not very well read, and I'm trying to catch up with classics. I have a book club here in town, and we only read stuff that's like 100 years old or older. So Dickens, again, is a big favorite. Anton Chekhov, I love, but that's short stories. Flannery O'Connor, I love, but that's short stories. I'm trying to think of some novels. Favorite novels would be things like The Catcher in the Rye, still a big favorite. I like coming of age stories, young boys, young men in stories. Carson McCullers, a great writer. The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. She was 23 years old when she wrote this most heartbreaking story you've ever read. You could read it six times and you cry every time. I mean, it's unbelievable. So that's a great writer that not a lot of people pay attention to. I like the modern era. I like Hemingway and Faulkner. And as far as commercial novels, what I wanted to do when I sat down to write a crime novel, I intended to write it, was a tribute, or at least my thank you to Elmore Leonard, whose writing I really like. And I also really like Walter Mosley, a writer who writes some wonderful, both short stories and novels. Those are my favorite crime writers that I know of, you know, and out there in the big name guys. I could talk a lot more about short stories.
As a young person, did you have an interest in writing or reading as a younger person?
No, I was a scientist. This is in the 60s, mid 60s. Everyone had to become an engineer or a scientist to catch up with the Russians. The belief was that Russian kids were inventing rockets and building nuclear submarines while I was out catching frogs. You know,
it's biology. Yeah,
I was a biology major in the University of Buffalo in 1966. And it was chemistry, calculus, quantitative analysis. It was brutal because I had been a really good high school student, so they thought I was smart. I was just a guy who knew how to take that and suck up the teacher. So I got killed when I went to university. I couldn't do organic chemistry. I had no idea what was going on.
You're the Chauncey Gardner. You were Peter Sellers in Being There.
Yeah, being yeah, there.
Right. Chauncey Gardner, and favorite movie. So no, I had no background in writing whatsoever. I was artistic to some extent. I painted and drew a little bit. And I did that when I first got to Alaska. I have a lot of paintings around the house. In fact, this story came out of a watercolor painting that's on the wall here. Well, I can show you this one. I don't, won't go on the radio, but this is for your entertainment. And now, can you see that picture of a woman dip netting?
Yes.
Okay. That's my wife, Lynn. That was a painting I did of her when dip netting in China Poot Bay circa 1985, something like that. I was telling Lois a story. I think I was putting together a collection of stories, and the publisher called from Boston and said, hey, we need one more Alaskan stories. Send me something, as if I had like piles of stories already finished. I'm sure Stan knows this kind of thing where publishers think you just can knock this stuff off. And he said, I said, oh, sure, I have a story and I don't have anything. And I'm on the phone to this guy. He says, what is it about? And I look, I'm around my office. I look up, I says, it's about dip netting. And the guy says, what the hell's dip netting? So I explained the personal use fishery. He says, yeah, but what's the story? I said, well, there's a woman and she's dip netting. He goes, but what happens? I said, well, there's a guy and they meet. And then, yeah, with that. And so he says, how far along are you? And I said, oh, she needs polishing, you know, just needs polishing. I don't have a word. I'm making this up as I go along. So he hung up the phone. He says, send it to me. And I had to sit down and write the darn thing.
This, oh my gosh, The Hunger of Crows. Where can we get The Hunger of Crows, Richard?
I always promote independent bookstores. They're here in Homer, it's the Homer Independent Bookstore. In Soldotna, it's River City. In Palmer, it's Fireside Books. And Anchorage is Tidal Wave Books. But also Barnes and Noble has it, or did. I haven't been to Anchorage in a while. And of course, get online. You can get it on Kindle. Amazon sells hard copies or Kindle. There's an audio book that the guy did a really good job. I'm very proud of the audio book. I had nothing to do with it other than listen to it. But the guy did a nice job narrating it, and it was a lot of fun. That's from Audible, the big audio book company. So it's out there. It's in various different forms.
Richard, do you think you have any more novels in you?
Yeah, I'm working on, I just threw out a novel. I don't know if you guys have ever done that. I had worked on a novel set in my hometown of Niagara Falls, New York, for many years, set in the 60s, coming of age story. And I just, in the past month, decided to give up on that one after 30 years of fighting with it. But I have been working on a Homer novel, kind of not a sequel exactly, but more of the same tone. A couple of characters might show up again from the first one. So yeah, I still have a lot of people here to embarrass and humiliate. So,
well,
hey, work isn't done yet.
We'll put it on for free and they can pay us to keep it off the air, Richard. We'll help you out.
Sounds like the producers.
Yeah, right. Exactly. One of my favorite movies. Right?
Absolutely.
I do want to thank Lois for getting me involved in this and Steve for taking the time and Stan and Chris for coming on board.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's Richard Chapone and his book is The Hunger for Crows. And thank you so much. We'll post it at BigAlaskaShow.com book review and we'll hook it up with links. And let's give a warm Big Alaska Show thank you to Richard Chapone. You can find Richard Chapone's book, The Hunger of Crows, in our book review section at BigAlaskaShow.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized sales agent for Xerox in Alaska. Call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at AESAlaska.com.
Thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. Uncle Steve with Mike Ford. Our last author is Steve Levi. Now, Steve is not only an author, he's a historian, he's a teacher, he's an educator, he's a professor, an entertaining one at that, as you'll find out. But one of the books he's put out is called Bonfire Saloon, a narrative poetry snapshot of the Alaska Gold Rush, Nome, December 3rd, 1903. And it's very clever, as Steve will tell you, it's a book of history disguised as literature. And we'll tell you that all the things we think are the Alaska Gold Rush are not, as you'll find out here with Steve Levi. Today is our Big Alaska Show Book Club. We're featuring our Big Alaska Show Book Review section, and we have our Big Alaska Show Book Club panel has gathered, and they're comprised of Lolo Page, Chris Lundgren, and Stan Jones. And these are authors. You can find some of their books on our Big Alaska Show Book Review section, and you'll find podcast interviews with each one of them as well. And we've gathered because our guest today is historian and author Steve Levi, and you'll find some of his books as well in our Big Alaska Show Book Review section. We have Archie Ferguson, Alaska's Crown Prince and Craziest Pilot in the World. And we have Cowboys of the Sky, the story of Alaska's bush pilots. And we also have The Human Face of the Alaska Gold Rush. It was a riotous time with saints and scoundrels living side by side. And then Steve also is the master of the impossible crime, and he's part of the esteemed author masterminds. Will you give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Steve, the name you can trust, Levi? Steve, you maintain, when I introduce you as a historian and an author, I've sort of put them in synonymous. Are you a historian first and then an author and a historian, or you're both? And Stan's, his works are, have some bit of truth in them as well. So
I look at myself as an educator, but if you read my books, even if you read the fiction, you're going to pick up information, actual historical information you didn't know before. You know, I'm not an entertainer. I'm not a historian. I look at myself as an educator because I want to make sure that when you finish my book, you've learned something or something true that you didn't know before.
That's completely different than the Big Alaska Show because, and by the way, Steve Levi is a liar from the very start because your podcasts are extremely entertaining. They're great stories. They're a lot of fun. And I think everybody by the end of this will agree with me. I talked to you about what we might talk about, and you want to talk about the gold rush. Why are you so interested in the Alaska Gold Rush?
Nobody's done anything on it. If you pull up the Alaska Gold Rush on the internet, pull up on Wikipedia, you get the Klondike. And the Klondike takes place around Dawson, which is in the Yukon Territory of Canada. It's a strike that lasts about 14 months and disappears. And it's made famous by Jack London and Robert Service. We have a Robert Service High here in Anchorage, and Robert Service had nothing to do with the Alaska Gold Rush. You know, and if you know that the UAA of the Sea Wolves, that's from Jack London's Sea Wolf book, and he had nothing to do with the Alaska Gold Rush. You know, so I mean, and in Anchorage we have the Valley of the Moon Park, which is a Jack London book, and Jack London had nothing to do with the Alaska Gold Rush. When I first got up here and I looked around, because I came up here in the 76, back before half of you were not born, and I started doing research on the Alaska Gold Rush, there wasn't anything. If you wanted to know about the Alaska Gold Rush, you had to read the newspapers, which were available in the libraries, and that was just about it. Then Ted Stevens got the archives to go down here in Anchorage, and in my bouts of unemployment, I went down to the archives and I went through all of the documents. So when I wrote my book on the Alaska Gold Rush, which is very spendy, it's boom and bust in the Alaska Gold Rush, but get it from the library, because if you want to buy it, I think it's $60. But it's the only book on the Alaska Gold Rush that does not include Dawson. The other book on the Alaska Gold Rush has about half of a book is on Dawson. Alaska Gold Rush is last, depending on when you say it ends, but the boom times are from 1880 to the First World War. That's 40 years.
Steve, do I recall that Wyatt Earp was in Nome?
Yeah, no, Wyatt Earp ran the, if you'll send me your email, I'll send you a picture of his bar and brothel. Wyatt Earp did the same thing everybody else did. They plunge into Nome about June 1st. They build everything. They make as much money as they can. And then they get out of Nome by September 15th. Because the Bering Sea will freeze over.
I had heard that Wyatt Earp, in any of the fights, he never was injured in all that time.
No, he never got injured. And what most people don't know is that after he left Alaska, he went back to Hollywood. And what he was doing is they were just doing Westerns at that time. And he was teaching all of the young actors, including John Wayne, you know, how they wore their guns, how they pulled their guns, the kind of expression. So if you want to know what Wyatt Earp actually sounded like, listen to John Wayne. because Wyatt Earp taught John Wayne how to talk like a cowboy.
And John Wayne was in Nome, right? Because I saw the movie.
The movie, The North to Alaska, has been made 7 times. And that was written by Rex Beach, who was actually in Nome.
Yeah.
And he came back to Hollywood and he did all of the movies that Will Rogers was in. He was the one that wrote those. And when Will Rogers came to Alaska, he met with Rex Beach in Nome, in Juneau. And then he flew on from there. But that, originally called The Spoiler, it's been made 7 times.
Chris wrote for a newspaper, I believe. Isn't that correct, Chris? Didn't you?
Yeah, I've written for newspapers in Michigan, back in Michigan.
Chris's book, The Accidental Tourist, which is just a hoot. Those were stories you did. I mean, you were writing for newspapers and you were like a journalist. You were like a reporter.
I think that was part of the inspiration for it and for wanting to do short stories and short pieces. Definitely. But, you know, looking at some of Steve's works, I was looking at the title of his most recent one, I believe, Bonfire Saloon. And I'm really intrigued by the subtitle there, a narrative poetry snapshot of the Alaska Gold Rush, Nome, December 3rd, 1903. I am so intrigued by a narrative poetry snapshot. I'm so eager to read this book. I'm sure it's beautifully written, and I've never heard a book described that way.
When I write, whatever it is that I write, I try to make every one of my books completely different than any other book that I have written and any other book that I've ever read. It's not that hard, is because I would say 99.999% of the books out there are pretty much in what's called genre. Mm-hmm. The great danger for someone like me is I will either make a heck of a lot of money on something that's different or I won't make a dime, you know, and nobody had done anything on the Alaska Gold Rush. And not only that, we're talking, I want to get down on the street level because that is where the real stories are. That is where the real drama is. You know, because you read a lot of history, you know, I read a lot of history books and they're all, you know, well, fine if you want to get a blessing, but you don't get the grease and the grime of what's actually happening on the street. Mm-hmm. And so what I did is I went ahead and they just took one night in a saloon in Nome. That means they're frozen in. These guys are frozen in. So they got to do something. And so here are all of these different people who are going to hang around in a saloon on that night. And they're just going to have a, you know, those names are accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the events that I write about, those are, I picked them up. They didn't necessarily happen in Nome, but I picked them up all over the place. You know, they had a guy who came up here and he wanted to save his money in the gold rush to make an airplane. And there's a picture of it and it flapped its wings. And I'm going, you're telling me you're coming to Alaska.
Well, that idea really took off, didn't it?
Build an airplane that flaps its wings. Give me a break. And the flapping mechanism is still today at the University of Alaska. And the reason that I like this so much is the guy lost all his teeth from scurvy, and he had a bear that was hanging around his homestead up there, an eagle, and he shot the bear. But he didn't have a horse to pull the bear away, and he couldn't leave the bear because the wolves would come and get it. Nobody buys bear meat. And he couldn't eat the bear because he didn't have any teeth. So what he did was he made dentures out of the bear's teeth, and then he ate the bear with its own teeth.
Yes. And
I'm going, hey, I had never heard of anything like that.
Actually, we had Andy Hall tell that as a tall Alaska tale. It's one of our favorite ones. And I believe it's gone down in the Guinness Book of Records as the only person who's ever eaten a bear with its own teeth.
One would think.
And you don't have to believe me, but the teeth that he made are at Fairbanks. They're in the museum in Fairbanks.
To Steve Levi's interview, just go to BigAlaskaShow.com and visit the Big Alaska Show book review section, where you'll find several of Steve's books, links, and podcasts, where you'll also find his book Bonfire Saloon. When Steve's around, it's always an adventure. And speaking of adventures, we'd be remiss in mentioning Chris Lundgren is on our Big Alaska Show book review panel, and her book Accidental Tourist, Alaska, True Tales of Ordinary People Facing Danger in the Wilderness. You can find that at BigAlaskaShow.com as well as her podcast. So, that's our show. Be sure to check out our book review section that features excellent books by Alaskan authors that cover all sorts of entertaining genres. Plus, you'll hear interview podcasts of the authors that take you behind the scenes of their books and expand one's appreciation of their works. I remember once a sign I saw that said, "When I works hard. When I thinks hard. When I read, I falls asleep." And to my baby girl, love you. Mike Ford, why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do?
All right, Uncle Steve, we want to thank Richard and Steve for joining us. We want to thank you for listening. And we want to thank our sponsors, Neighbors Windows and Doors, Alaska's window experts at 6251 Tuttle, or online at neighborswindowsanddoors.com, and Alaska Enterprise Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent for Alaska. Visit aesalaska.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good line through your two tall Alaska tales, it's got to be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.